Good morning, everyone. Call to order this hearing of the Minnesota Senate Taxes Committee, Thursday, March 13th at 8:32 a.m. A quorum is present. The first item on our agenda is adoption of the minutes. Are there any corrections or additions to the minutes? Seeing none, the minutes stand approved as presented. The first bill, Senator Housechild. Senator Housechild brings us Senate File 2074. Senator Housechild.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Today I have for you Senate File 2070. Did I get the number? 2074.
2076. Sorry,
that's a typo. 76. I think the agenda might be wrong, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry.
But no, that's okay.
The agenda stands corrected. It is Senate File 2076.
Great. Thank you.
You bet.
This bill increases the three classification tiers applied to Class 1C homestead resort properties, also called mom-and-pop resorts. And Madam Chair, we're lucky here in Minnesota to have some of the most beautiful places in the country, in my opinion. I grew up going to Otter Tail County to my grandparents' lake resort my lake cabin, but we were directly next to a resort, a mom-and-pop resort. So each year we looked forward to seeing the families that had a tradition of coming to the resort, being there, creating these friendships and these long-term camaraderies, and people having those opportunities is dwindling. What we're seeing is that more and more mom-and-pop resorts are not able to make it in the environment that we are in. As we know, we've seen more and more Airbnbs, more moves away from resort-style opportunities for our outdoors. And so this bill is really meant to get at supporting these types of resorts for the owners across Minnesota. Class 1C resort properties generally must be devoted to temporary and seasonal residential occupancy for recreational purposes, but not devoted to commercial purposes for more than 250 days per year. A portion of the residence must also be used for a homestead by the owner, and the property must be adjacent to public waters or state trails administered by the DNR. This bill increases the three classification tiers applied to Class 1C homestead properties. The first tier would include the first $1.5 million of value, changed from $600,000. The second tier would include the next $3 million of value, up to $4.5 million, which is a change from $2.3 million. And the third tier would include value over $4.5 million. The classification rates for each tier would not change, which would be 0.5%, 1%, and 1.25% respectively for each of the three tiers. The third tier of value is also subject to the state general levy, which also is unchanged in this bill, Madam Chair. These adjustments would be effective beginning with assessment year 2026. The third tier of value is also subject to the state general levy, which is also unchanged in this bill. The revenue estimate notes that about 1,900 parcels contain Class 1C property in 2025, with a total statewide taxable market value of $813 million. About 440 of these properties, or 45% of all Class 1C properties, have taxable market value exceeding the current first-tier limit of $600,000. The increase in this bill would mean about 72% of these homestead resorts would have market value under the first-tier limits with a 0.5% class rate. Another 22% of value would fall in the second tier, and 6% would be in the third tier above $4.5 million. With that, Madam Chair, I do have several testifiers from the resorts, as well as Joel Carlson. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Housechild. First, are there questions or comments for Senator Housechild? I'm seeing none. I do hope that members will consult the revenue estimate as we see there is a property tax refund interaction beginning in fiscal year 2028. So um, Senator Housechild, do you want me to call on Mr. Carlson, or do you want to go to your local testifiers?
Thanks, Madam Chair. I think Mr. Carlson can go first, if that's okay with you.
Okay, Mr. Carlson, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chairman and members. Joel Carlson. I'm here on behalf of the community of Minnesota Resorts, a group I've represented for a long time. I appreciate the time this committee has taken to talk about the resort tax issue. And I just want to very briefly, tell you the problem that we have, and Senator Weber identified this. The assessing system doesn't work for resorts because most times the assessor assesses your property at its highest and best use, and the highest and best use, as determined by the assessor, is literally to break that property up individually and sell it off. That's where it gets the most value. And that's not their problem. That's what they have to do. But we brought that issue to the legislature in the early 2000s. And the result of pushing back and wanting to have a different way to assess these properties, because we're not here with lifesavers, we're here with life preservers. This is an industry we want to preserve. This is an industry that all of Minnesota benefits from. And so to help preserve the resorting industry, we developed this tier system in 2005. And, 2003, special session 2003. And the grand bargain was that we would keep your property, the first tier of your property, as low as we could as a tax rate, and then escalate it up as the value rose. What we're here letting you know is that over time, the last time these were adjusted is 2008, and over time we've seen a tripling of the value of our property. And so the bargain that we were trying to achieve just hasn't kept up with the rapid valuations that we've seen. And the revenue note, and I do want to talk about it because it's actually kind of interesting. On the revenue estimate, it says there are 1,900 1C parcels. And then you look at which ones qualify into these tiers. There's less than 600 resorts left in Minnesota from our high water mark of 3,000. Hmm. And so many of these resorts have 5 and 6 different parcels attached to them. That's how you get to 1,900 parcels. And when you think about that, and the value of an individual parcel is just in the first tier, and they have 5 parcels, you can see the problem that we have. And so we appreciate you taking this time. You're gonna hear some from some of our members, and I appreciate the committee doing this when we're here at the Capitol, and that's important to us, and we thank you very much. And that is a picture that I will hang on my wall in all of my years here. That's one I've never seen taken before. Thank you, Madam Chair, members, and we'll be here, of course, to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Are there any questions or comments for Mr. Carlson? Thank you very much. We'll proceed to the other witnesses. Invite Beth Klinsky and Emily Norris to join us. We'll begin with Ms. Klinsky. If you would identify yourself, please, for the record.
Good morning, Senators. My name is
And you'll need to bring the mic as close to your mouth as possible. They don't reach very far, and speak as loud as you can. Appreciate that.
Good morning, Senators. My name is Beth Klinsky. I own and operate Knotty Pines Resort in Nevis, Minnesota. It's part of the Park Rapids area. It's on Boulder Lake. It is a woman-owned business. I own it along, but my husband and my 3 children also help with the day-to-day operations. We are a seasonal resort. It's been in our family for 19 years. I bought it from my parents in 2021, and it had been for sale for 5 years because they insisted that it stay a resort, even though financially it wasn't the most viable thing to do, but as their health declined, they were getting closer and closer to just selling it off individually, and we didn't want that to happen, so we figured out a way to make it work, and we're like, we just couldn't let it go. because we saw the blood, sweat, and tears that they put into it, and we kind of have grown to love and know the families that come each year. And these families that we host, they look forward to this and they save up for it all year long. And we didn't want to take that away from them. And by keeping it a resort, we actually host on average 135 different families each summer that are, you know, supporting the local shops. They're getting their groceries at the grocery store. They're eating at the local restaurants. And so like I said, these families kind of look forward to this every year. And we're not in it for the money, because my husband and I, along with many other resorters, do have outside jobs just to make ends meet and to keep up with all of the upkeep. We're not in it for the money. We're in it for those families making memories every summer. Like, it's kids taking their, it's dads teaching their kids how to fish. It's watching the sunset while listening to the loons. It's the kids just spending all day on the beach getting sunburned. I know this last summer we let a longtime guest take out a pontoon free of rental or free of charge because their 12-year-old son, that was their last time that he got to go fishing before ending, he lost a battle to cancer. And so it's just those key memories that you just can't have anywhere else. We all appreciate any support you can give us. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there questions for Ms. Klinsky? Seeing none, Ms. Norris, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
I don't know if I'm tall enough to reach all the way to this microphone. Hi, I'm Emily Norris. I own Pamoosh Resort with my husband, Tim, and my mother, Rochelle Chase. We're outside of Bemidji about half an hour, kind of in a little triangle between Bemidji, Cass Lake, and Black Duck, if you're familiar with that area. Today is actually my five-year anniversary of walking away from corporate America, so it's interesting to be back up in dress clothes instead of flannels and tennis shoes and addressing a group again. I laugh that I'm a corporate survivor, and that is nothing against corporate America. That is something about me as a person. And I'm here to talk to you today about our industry, but also about mental health, because I think they go hand in hand, and it's part of how my family came into this and what I think the resort community brings to our state. This world is really fast. It's fast, it's stressful. And when I look at both the reasons we left our fast-paced life to go and own and operate a resort, it is not because we work less. I work significantly more now, but it is from the heart, and it is so that people have a place to go and stop. When you think about your own vacation, for example, that feeling of the day you're off and you know that you've got a week to go and reconnect with the people that you actually are working for, it's what people do all year long. People literally go to work to pay their bills, and the dream for some people, the American dream, is to be able to go to their family cabin, to go up to the lake. I was blessed enough to have a family cabin at the age of 14. Prior to that, I grew up going to campsites and tent camping. My husband grew up camping. My mother can tell you stories of her dad getting off the road as a long-haul trucker, putting all nine kids in the back of the station wagon, driving up from Iowa and vacationing in Minnesota. This is an industry that has been along in Minnesota for such a long time and a really crucial part of how we get out and explore our state. Others have talked about the financial impacts that we're going through and this tier adjustment. I would like to draw attention to just what it is that we do within our communities and for constituents, both where we are located and those of you that don't have constituents for us. So if you are representing our area, we're not just businesses. We're businesses that can't get up and move and won't get up and move and don't want to get up and move. My children attend Black Duck School. It's a community with about 800 people in it. Last month, it was announced that Anderson Fabric is closing down. They are our largest employer. It's 120 people in our community that work there. So if you take that back to our school, I don't know if we're still going to have that school. I don't know if our kids' buses are now going to become an hour long. I don't know if that gas station is going to survive. I don't know if that grocery store will survive. The things that are keeping northern Minnesota and the small town communities viable in some ways are still the resorts. We can't move. Every other corporation can find another natural resource. They're corporations that can move based on profit. We are not. We are essential. Not to go too far into that. And then if you don't have constituents in our area, we're where they go to vacation. Not everybody can afford Lakeshore. I don't think everybody wants to do that. So we are not only contributing to everyone's ability to access these resources, we're a key contributor in the area. So if my resort closes down, yep, somebody else can buy my property tax. You can still get that 10 grand out of us a year, but you're going to lose the $20,000 I pay to the local community, to those young people's jobs on the weekend for us. You're going to lose the $200,000 that we spend on other local businesses and our utilities, our spends as a year. You're going to lose more than just the property tax, and you're going to lose access, and it's what we keep seeing in the industry. So, sorry, let me just see if I missed any big highlights. On a personal level, just to say what our resort's gone through, we purchased in March 2020, happy coincidence with COVID. It wasn't a planned escape. It just all kind of worked out that way. And at that time, it was about 1.3% of our gross revenue that we were putting into property taxes. I'm at 2.8% right now. So I've personally seen a doubling. It's about three of my rentals a year now that need to go to property taxes instead of the other areas of our businesses. So I think that is all I have.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any comments? Thank you very much. And next we will hear from Mr. Mike Bolt. Welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself for the record.
Hi, I'm Michael Bolt. My wife Tracy and I own Cedar Point Resort up in beautiful Marcell, Minnesota, north of Grand Rapids. Thank you for having us here to testify. I'm a board member on the Community of Minnesota Resorters, and I'm in, I run the or responsible for the legislative end of it. So I hear from a lot of resorts about their concerns, and I've had several conversations this week because we're here to testify and appreciate to have the opportunity. And the concerns of most resorters are that they're struggling. It's we join or become a resort member not to be rich and make a lot of money, because if you do that, that's not going to happen. And we put a ton of time into the resorts. You're not going to go fishing every day as if people think you own a resort. You're busy every day greeting your guest, enjoying the people who come up, the children that come up. We provide a very valuable service to our communities because we're a lot of times the largest employer in that area and the largest draw. Without our resorts, the local gas station or convenience store, the couple restaurants that are up by us and a few businesses would not survive, because in just our little town of Marcell, we probably bring in, during the peak summertime, 600 to 800 people a week to our area. And our cost to do business has greatly increased over the years. And our property tax, as Joel had said, is valued not on our business or what our business value is, but it's based on what our property would be if individuals, we'd split it up and do that. And as resorts and the people I bought the resort from wanted to continue this resort tradition, our resort's been part of Minnesota's community for almost 100 years, and we want to continue to sell, or when we get time to retire, to be able to continue our resort in the community by having the option to either sell or split it up. But the way the current tax codes and that are, and the business conditions, is the easy way is to split off your property. But that means we have three or four landowners come in, buy the places, you know, tear apart the lake shore to have sandy beaches at each one. And we want to keep our resort as pure as we can and as natural as we can. So as resort owners, we're we're not here looking for a handout. We're just looking for some help because we struggle to, you know, survive, and we love our business, and we want to be able to continue to provide for all our, you know, people of Minnesota and out of the state a place to go where they can't afford lake property. And, you know, we just want to have a fair shake in what it is, because we own lakeshore frontage, so people can enjoy that. So that's where I'm at this point. We just appreciate the opportunity and you guys, the senators, reviewing our bill, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Questions, Senator Weber? Did you have a question?
No, I was just responding to your question.
Oh, okay. anyone else have a comment? Then Senator Housechild, do you have a final comment?
Thanks, Madam Chair, and thanks again to all the resort owners who came down. I'm sure many of you came from far away, and I do appreciate that. As a senator that represents some of our most rural and isolated areas in Minnesota, it's important that constituents have the chance to come down and testify in person, but I know that takes away from you being at your businesses, so I do sincerely appreciate that. Madam Chair, I'm convinced, and members, I'm convinced that if more Americans had the chance to be by water, to be out in the outdoors, to experience an open sky and watch the stars at night, to be by a fire. I know it's a little cheesy, but I genuinely believe a lot of us would live a lot longer. There'd be a lot less heart disease, a lot less strokes, and a lot less, frankly, even cancer. I think there is something magical to what we have in Minnesota. I grew up in Fargo, North Dakota, on the border with Minnesota. And as I described earlier, my family had a cabin in Otter Tail. And I cannot tell you how many North Dakotans, and I'm sure Iowans and South Dakotans as well, travel to our state for our greatest resource, which is our lakes and our outdoors and the opportunities that we have for people to just get away from what Ms. Norris was talking about, which is the hustle and bustle, the corporate lifestyles that many of us live. And as a father of a five-year-old and a three-year-old, I can tell you that technology is coming more and more into the lives of our kids. I bring them to my family cabin, and they don't get there as much as I do. As I did. I worry that if we don't give people the opportunity to experience the outdoors, if it's not as readily available, we're gonna lose something. And what we're doing here is a really small fix to make it so that our outdoors are available for people. And I want to see this resort that's next to my grandparents' cabin stay alive, and these folks as well. So thanks for the time. Sorry for getting so emotional. Okay. That's awkward, but I do appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Senator Housechild, our next bill is Senate File 132. There's going to be an amendment to add the language of 2076 to it.
Wonderful, Madam Chair.
Senate File 2076 is laid over. Next item on our agenda is indeed Senate File 132. Senator Putnam, this is a bill that is going to be presented to us by our Senate Counsel. It is a bill that is a gathering of items from last year's tax bill that passed the Senate that did not survive in the conference committee because of any number of reasons. And we have been working in partnership both with Senate Democrats on this committee, Senate Republicans on this committee, and with members of the and tax leaders in the in the House in the hopes that we could have an early tax bill that showed the public, our constituents, including the people who are here with us today, that we indeed know how to work together across the aisle. So this is kind of, some of us call it the early early tax bill of non-controversial items and that have passed before or that are presented so exceptionally well today, or so it is the base bill is Senate File 132, which is authored in the House by Representative Davids. Senator Putnam will be presenting it at any time that it comes up. We're going to be voting to send it to the floor, but it is Senator Putnam's bill. But we're going to ask the Senate Counsel to either speak from their chairs or approach the witness table to go through Senate File 132. After it's presented, we'll call on Senator Housechild to make an amendment to propose an amendment, not because of your tears, but because of all these fine people that have come down today to support you on this bipartisan bill, both in the Senate and in the House. I checked the authors, and then we'll have an amendment. Then we'll have a motion to send it to the floor. So we'll begin with Article 1. I'm sorry, yes, of course. Mr. Munn, would you give us a spreadsheet? And knowing that we are going to make, are proposing to make a change at some point.
Yep.
Mr. Munn.
Yep, Madam Chair and members, spreadsheet in your packets starts with some totals on lines 1 and 2. That just shows that there is a $138,000 cost for fiscal years 25 through 27. And a $120,000 cost for the fiscal 28-29 biennium. Most of the items in on the spreadsheet were contained in either last year's Senate omnibus bill or have been heard by this committee this year. I will point out the one exception on line 10. These are education credit assignability modifications from the governor's budget bill. There's no fiscal effect for that. There is a subtraction for discharged course debt that is from Senator Gustafson's Senate File 860, having a negligible cost in both biennia. On line 13 is Senator Klein's subtraction for foreign service worker pay. It has a cost of $10,000 a year beginning in fiscal year 27. On line 17, and I skipped over line 9, are modifications to the transferability of the short line railroad credit. It's from Senator Weber's bill. On lines 21 and 22 are two interactions with the estate tax farm subtraction arising from classification, ag homestead classification modifications that are also on lines 36 and 33 under the property tax aids and credits section. Line 30 is a property, lines 30 through 36 are all either interactions with the property tax refund or in the case of line 30, change in the definition of income used to qualify for the refund from Senator Gustafson's discharged coerced debt bill. Line 31 is the attachments and appurtenances clarification, having a cost of $40,000 a year beginning in fiscal year 27. On line 32 is a property tax exemption for tribal-owned property in Minneapolis having a cost of $10,000 per year beginning in fiscal 28. Line 33 is Senator Anderson's bill that increases the shareholder limit to qualify for agricultural homestead property. It has an unknown effect on property tax refunds. On line 34 is another tribal property tax exemption for a property in Cook County. Has a negligible cost beginning in fiscal year 28.
Just give me a
On line 35 is a property tax exemption for nonprofits that use their property for grazing. That has a negligible effect on property tax refunds beginning in fiscal year 27. And on line 36 is a change to the classification of ag homestead property, and it has an unknown effect beginning in fiscal year 28. Those two provisions that I previously mentioned regarding ag homestead property classification also have an unknown effect on the ag homestead market value credit. And on line 45 is a negligible interaction with the school building bond agricultural credit resulting from the property tax exemption for tribal-owned property in Cook County. On line 50 is a provision that provides the city of Stewart with $88,000, which is the amount of their foregone local government aid payment in 2023. And lines 51 through the end of the spreadsheet are other items that do not have a fiscal effect that are contained in the bill. There's public safety aid reporting requirements, tax expenditure review commission modifications, changes to the political contribution refund, and public finance provisions that my colleagues can explain in greater detail. That's it.
Members, are there any questions or reflections on the spreadsheet? Anything that is not clear? Then we'll proceed to going through the bill section by section, article by article, starting with Article 1.
Madam Chair and members, Article 1 is the income and corporate franchise tax article. Section 1, sections 1, 2, and 3 are from Senate File 45, which was Senator Chair Russ's bill, modifying some provisions for the Tax Expenditure Review Commission. In particular, it would allow the Commissioner of Revenue to designate another individual to represent the Commissioner or the Commissioner's designee at a Tax Expenditure Review Commission or TERC meeting, and it would require the Commissioner to convene the first TERC meeting of the year. Sections 4 and 5 pertain to the online political contribution refund program, and these come from Senate File 9, Senator Rest's bill. Section 6 pertains to removing the assignability of the K-12 credit. This is from the governor's bill, which has now been introduced as Senate File 2374. And Section 6 would strike some language regarding a tax preparer's authority to assign a portion of the credit to an account without the taxpayer's name. Again, this is kind of a technical change to conform with the repeal of the assignability in a later section of the article. Section 7 is an income tax subtraction for discharge coerced debt, and this is from Senate File 860, Senator Gustafson. Section 8 is the subtraction for foreign service pension retirement pay. This is Senate File 211 from Senator Klein. Section 9 is another section regarding the online political contribution refund, again from Senate File 9, Senator Rest. Section 10 is also a provision from Senate File 860 from Senator Gustafson, and it would also include the subtraction for discharge coerced debt in the definition of income for the renter's credit. Sections 11 and 12 are from Senate File 1046, Senator Weber's bill, to make some modifications to the Short Line Railroad Infrastructure Modernization Credit. It would add a provision requiring the Department of Transportation to issue a credit certificate to the railroad for purposes of marketing the credit and transferring it to another taxpayer. And it also creates a definition of eligible transferor for purposes of allowing the credit to be claimed by a taxpayer that is part of a pass-through entity that owns a short line railroad that would be eligible for the credit. Section 13 is another provision from the Senate File 211, Senator Klein's bill regarding Foreign Service pension retirement pay, and it would add a reference to that subtraction for purposes of calculating alternative minimum tax. And then finally, Madam Chair, Section 4 is the repealer of the assignability of the K-12 credit in the data practices chapter as well as the income tax chapter. Again, this is from the governor's bill, now introduced as Senate File 2374, and that concludes the income and corporate franchise tax article.
And Ms. Paula, I think you meant to say Section 14, not, you said 4.
I'm sorry.
The last one,
sorry.
Section 14. Thank you very much. Article 2 deals with property taxes. Mr. Sylvian.
Madam Chair, members, Article 2 is the property tax article. Section 1 is from Senator Weber's proposal, Senate File 49, and this would provide that exempt property owned by a nonprofit conservation organization that is leased, loaned, or otherwise made available for grazing activities remains exempt and a personal property tax is not imposed. Sections 2, 7, and 8 are from Senator Putnam's Senate File 132, and that is the attachments and appurtenances language that clarifies that except for substations and transmission or generation equipment, the utilities, cooperatives, power distribution systems are exempt from property taxes. Section 3 is a proposal from Senator Mohammed, Senate File 1579. This establishes a permanent property tax exemption for property located in Minneapolis, owned by the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. Section 4 is a tribal property tax exemption from Senator Hochschild from Senate File 363. This would also establish a permanent property tax exemption for five individual apostles in Cook County, owned by the Grand Portage Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Section 5 is a proposal from Senator Anderson, Senate File 755, and this would increase from 12 to 18 the number of allowable shareholders, members, or partners for entity-owned agricultural homestead property. Section 6 is a proposal from Senator Weber from Senate File 245, and this would expand the list of qualified relatives that are eligible for the special agricultural homestead for purposes of unoccupied agricultural property to include grandparents, step-parents, stepchild, uncle, aunt, nephew, and niece of the owner or the owner's spouse. And Section 9 is the corresponding proposal from Senator Gustafson's Senate File 860, and this would provide that the amount of discharge of indebtedness resulting from coerced debt shall not be considered income for purposes of determining eligibility for the property tax refund. Madam Chair and members, I would note that all sections in the article were included in last year's proposal, except for Section 5, Senator Anderson. That is a new proposal this year.
Thank you, Mr. Sylvia. Any questions for Mr. Sylvia on Article 2? Article 3, Ms. Johnson.
Madam Chair and members, Article 3 is the Aids and Credits article. Section 1 establishes a reporting requirement for public safety aid recipients, and this is the language that was included in last year's Senate omnibus bill. And then Section 2 is Senate File 1108, Senator Grunhagen's bill that provides local government aid penalty forgiveness to the city of Stewart. Similar language was carried in last year's tax bill, and this year's language includes an appropriation in fiscal year 2025 from the general fund to the Commissioner of Revenue to make a payment of $87,501.50.
Thank you very much. Article 4 is public finance. Mr. Sylvian.
Madam Chair, members, Article 4 is the public finance article. This article contains the four sections that were carried in last year's omnibus tax bill and came from Chair Rest Senate File 5235 from the 2024 session. Section 1 modifies the definition of debt obligation to include the construction of a courthouse or a justice center if connected to a jail, correctional facility, or other law enforcement facility. This is for purposes of the credit enhancement program. Sections 2, 3, and 4 all relate to the state's allocation of the volume cap for tax-exempt bonds. Section 2 makes clear that the Bond Allocation Act applies to bond issued by an economic development authority. Section 3 and 4 clarifies that for residential rental project allocations or other types of allocations, the period in which an issuer must permanently issue obligations shall be the earlier of 180 days of the allocation or the last business day of December. This is so that the allocation would not go into the next year, since the allocation must be used before the end of the calendar year.
Are there any questions or comments for about Article 4? Is there further discussion of the bill? Senator Housechild.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Still recovering.
I'm still emotionally distraught here. Can we, so I don't know what the amendment
is.
I apologize.
I'm gonna ask Ms. Pollack to provide the proper language, but the idea is that you would move the language of 2076 be added as an amendment to the DE amendment of Senate File 132, and with accompanying appropriate changes to the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Ms. Pollack, did I get that right, or Mr. Sylvia?
Yes, Madam Chair and members, I would just note that the amendment would be on line, after line 25.5 of the A2 amendment. The instruction would be to insert the language from Senate File 2076 and then a corresponding note to update the spreadsheet accordingly to reflect the addition of that bill.
Thank you. Senator Housechild, is that your motion?
That is my motion, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Is there discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, say no. The motion prevails, and the amendment proposed by Senator Housechild is adopted. We now have Senate File 132 before us as amended. Senator Putnam, do you have a motion? Which is to pass the bill as amended.
It's always this smooth.
What? Okay. I guess your first motion would be to adopt the DE amendment as amended.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move to adopt the A2 amendment, please.
As amended.
As amended.
All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion prevails. Senator Putnam.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move that Senate File 132 as amended be passed and sent to the floor of the Senate.
Does everyone understand that motion? Any discussion or cheers or something like that? Anyway, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, say no. Motion prevails. Announcements? Do we have anything?
We're going to meet we'll meet all 3 days next week. Agenda is still TBD.
We'll be meeting all 3 days next week, and agendas will be forthcoming. There be no further business before the committee. We're adjourned.